morning and welcome, everyone. Today is September 27th, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a weekly business session. At least a quorum and majority of the board is here this morning. We're going to start, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance, so please rise. Stand with me, I guess, is what I'd say these days.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good opportunity to put your cell phone on vibrate. If you have one, or silence, we've got a pretty short agenda here. We're going to move through pretty quickly. Lots to do today. Item number one is the administrative calendar. We're going to review that. Before taking action, however, we're going to take item number two, which is requesting comments from a citizen. Then we'll come back to the administrative calendar, take action, and then go on to the consent. So without further ado, item number one on the administrative calendar is approval of animal control officer supervisor. So you normally would be Commissioner Morton, but we've got Cecilia Hay from our HR department to...
Cecilia Cornish.
Oh, sorry. Old habits. Yeah, just introduce yourself and then we can go forward from there.
So I'm Cecilia Cornish. I'm an HR analyst for in Human Resources. And what I have today is a request for approval to reclass one of our positions. As you know, supervision of animal control officers is being moved to the Sheriff's Office. And currently there's an open position for an animal control officer lead, which we would like to have reclassified to animal control officer supervisor. The purpose for the reclassification is to ensure better service to the community and then also proper investigative processes. In addition to, just to note, Sheriff Daniel has requested that we actually change the name for both the officer and the supervisor to animal care officer and animal care officer supervisor.
The change from control to care?
Mm-hmm.
The
yeah.
challenge is that it's specifically outlined in our charter for animal control. So this is a conversation we should have probably had on Thursday.
Okay.
And Sheriff Daniels probably doesn't know some of the historic nuances with
right.
calling it animal control. That's not something that's necessarily, in my opinion, cursorily reviewing it right here on the fly, is something that we have a lot of discretion over. It's called that by statute. It's called that by charter. And so we probably should approve it the way it's being proposed today.
Today.
And we can work on if we need to change the name later. That's not as big of a function and may not need to come to the weekly business session, but I appreciate where he's trying to come from, but I think that's a longer conversation with a little bit of backstory
gotcha.
That chap.
Okay.
So, anything else on
that's
that?
That's it. That's all I have.
Anything, Commissioner Morgan?
So we're waiting on it?
No, we're going to approve it the way it is,
okay.
the way it's been presented, because animal control officer or animal control, that element of the title is set out by statute and by charter. So it's not exactly something that we have a lot of discretion to keep consistent with those pieces that govern it. So I think it's going to need to be approved the way it is.
Okay.
And if we do need to change it for some other reason, we can do that later.
Follow up with that.
Well, and I just want to be clear that... the purpose of this is to bring more oversight to the program, to provide a better supervision for the system. And having a lead, there was encouragement and direction, but no real authority to be the supervisor. And so really being able to evaluate the program and see that this is necessary to have an actual supervisor over the program, I think you will find that there's a better service provided in the community because of it.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I think the supervisory role would have always been there. It was previously the public health director, and I think what the sheriff's looking for in this capacity with this supervisor is if the supervisor isn't him, because otherwise it's going to be, and I think he's got enough on his plate as far as taking on those responsibilities.
And I think a little closer direction, you know, rather than
on a,
levels apart.
Yeah, degree of separation.
Yeah.
A lot less. So, perfect. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Item number two is from requesting comments from citizens. I've got a few in the audience today. So, Mr. Ford, you can go first. Yes, and Ms. Casanelli, you will go as well. Thank you for your email earlier this morning or late last night.
Willard Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. Yesterday's talk show, you guys talked about the fire and some of the problems I think we have. It is, first and foremost, you know, I don't know why a fire is not considered a national disaster and ran under FEMA. that comes out of the Forest Service and the BLM's budget, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And more importantly, I think, is the fact that we're going to have to go out of our state to get support for changes. At least two of our U.S. congressmen don't seem to have a lot of interest in changing our mandates for fighting fires inside of the national monuments and stuff. And the result of that is things like the Chetco Bar. And it's not gone away. We've had fires in this county as far back as I can remember, and I was born and raised here. It is something that's going to happen in this particular part of Southern Oregon. Some of our challenges, I think, is the people in Congress on the East Coast don't understand that. I lived in Virginia for 10 years, and we need to be watered lines there. It rains every day in the summer. They don't understand the fact that we don't get a lot of rain from the middle of spring to the fall. And so it's going to be an uphill battle, but I think we're going to have to go probably to other states to get support from our congressmen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Anyone else? Ms. Cassinelli.
Sam Cassinelli, Newman, Oregon. I have a couple of requests. I see on the positions that are going to be filled for the animal control supervisor and officer and the facilitator that there's no rate of pay, you just have the range. And usually on these things, you guys have somebody specifically to hire, and usually you know what the payload is. So, the public would kind of like to see exactly what is going to be spent. Also, on the Board of Property Tax Appeal appointments, I know it's by the clerk's office, but could you please request that the clerk put that up for applications? It seems like it's the same three people every single year, and I haven't seen applications for that. And then the item that I sent to you this morning was somebody in Jackson County, Patriot, sent me some literature about BLM wants to put herbicides and to maintain the undergrowth in our forests. And, for years and years and years, the environmentalists have been complaining that when people go in and log, they put these herbicides and insecticides and pesticides on the land, and it contaminates the water table for everybody. And so now I think it's kind of interesting that BLM, because they had a policy of not cutting a whole lot of trees and letting the loggers go in there, for that reason, now because we have fires that are rampant in the summer and we're breathing all this horrible air, that now they want to spray all this stuff onto the land, and not only will we be breathing the smoke, but we'll be drinking all this unsafe stuff. So I'm hoping the commissioners are on top of this, and that today is the last day for the public to submit public comment, but I'm hoping that this board has objected to what BLM wants to do regarding the spray of all this toxic stuff. Thank you.
Anyone else for 3 minutes? This is your time to speak. 3 minutes. Just state your name and address. Nope, just here to hang out. And we've got a pretty short agenda here today. Are you sure you want to? Okay, come on up. Don't be bashful, because I know you're not. There are bashful people in this world, but you are not one of them.
Mark Collier, Josephine County. So I've spoken with two of you, and I appreciate that, but I just wanted to go ahead and sum it all up.
And that is the sense is, my feeling is, that the 300-foot setback, going from 30 feet existing and 15 feet on the sides, the sense is that it's punitive in nature, that you want your pound of flesh, that Salem is too long in getting to address these issues, that we have complaints that have gone from, the numbers have gone from 300 to 700 to 1,000. But Ms. Schmelzer, without revealing the details in those, has said on record that now we're at 1,000, and when asked, what was the major impetus, what is the one overall, and she said it was fences. So it doesn't have that screaming feeling that requires a punitive reaction. That's what she's on record as saying. 1,000 complaints, what's the major? Fences. Okay, let's deal with that. My sense is, and I've viewed everyone from video or from YouTube or wherever, is that there are about three groups that are in play right here. There are the people that have, regarding the cannabis situation, the people that have complained, both verbally, in writing or email and letter, and with a complaint venue. And they've come and I've listened to them. And instead of, you know, approaching or talking or trying to solve it right away, I listened to that one lady and a few other ladies. And what I found is one common theme is what they were describing was not the other group that's in the room, the people that are in compliance, the 2,500 or 3,000 medical grows that are already there, maybe it's a micro tier, maybe it's 48, the lavender farmers and the fear for a reprisal here. So of the three groups that I'm seeing, 700 or 1,000 complaints versus 3,000 grows doesn't rise to the level that requires such an action to take everybody out. So in just my simple diagram, you have 700 complaints, you have group one, those people that are coming here saying, we want to be in compliance. They're in compliance because they're either registered through OMMP or transitioning to OLCC. The people that aren't here are the ones that we want to go after. And they want to go after them. And that's why I've spoken to Commissioner Dale. I'm going to respectfully appeal that the people in group one aren't dealing with the gorillas, the gorilla grows in group two. So to sum it would be to say that the 800-pound gorilla in the room is not in the room. He's not here defending his illegal grow site, whether it's fences, water, trash, recycling, noise, lighting, dogs, guns, all that. I don't think they're coming to the table. If you take those 700 to 1,000 complaints, put them in an infinity diagram, group them out, and find out what they are. Whether you get them to the panel, they might not be the right body. Give them to something. Make that panel planning committee come out and say, what is it? Throw your cards on the table and figure out what it is and then go attack that. I think you can do that without throwing out the baby while you're changing the bath water. I don't need 10 seconds to sum, but I've spoken with both. Yeah, I appreciate your time. I think we're headed in the right direction, but I don't want to see the baby thrown out while you're changing that bath water.
Great.
I think that's where it's headed.
Anyone else? Yes, go ahead. Yep. You can do that.
Raleigh Smith, animal advocate. And
are you a Josephine County resident, Smith?
Yes.
Great.
So I just wanted to kind of plant something in the minds when the animal control officers are going to transfer to the sheriff. If and I don't know if it's going to be a union position. Is it?
We'll respond when you're done.
Okay. And so,
but nothing's changing in their status.
Well, one of my biggest concerns is the availability of an animal control officer after hours. They're supposed to be on call, but in the past, they're like out of the area and they don't get a text or whatever. And so oftentimes I'm called. Dispatch will have someone call me because there's a dog tied up in the middle of nowhere in after hours when you can't get a hold of the animal shelter or whatever. And I'm hoping that something will be available, that there's an on-call officer to take those emergency calls when it's, you know, 8 o'clock at night, 2 in the morning when you have an animal in distress, that there's oftentimes no one to reach out to. And I would hope that that's going to kind of be some kind of consideration put in there, that that would be available. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. to address that, Ms. Pinchot?
Sure. So one of the things that is going to be a help with this transition to sheriff's office is we took the lead position and changed it to a supervisor position. So they'll have a direct working supervisor on the road with them to assist, and we've added a third animal control officer to respond. So where the lead previously handled the zone, we'll have three separate officers plus a supervisor now. So the ability, they currently have an on-call schedule, but there's particular, the situation of when they can be called out is different. So that's something we can talk with the supervisor. We have a new deputy director coming with the public health department, which will coordinate the shelter for needs that they have, and we can express the sheriff, so he will be handling the staffing. But the union will stay the same, their pay will stay out of the same pocket. The idea is that it's just the oversight and supervision is changing to the sheriff's office to bring a higher level of training in the areas that they do with criminal investigation, evidence handling, and making sure that search and seizure is handled in an appropriate fashion. Right now, we're down two people. So, essentially, and one of them's fairly new, so the ability to have on-call is kind of stuck on one person. And so, but they already are on-call, so we can relook at our regulations as far as when they get called out and for what. So, there will be four. Again, the supervisor will be a working supervisor in the field with them. So the potential is they each will be able to respond to their calls fully. The supervisor can back them up as an assistance, but also supervising them. And previous comment was made about the pay. There is nobody in mind for these positions. We have posted for them. If you are interested in applying for the animal control officer supervisor or the other animal control officer position, we are accepting applications. And with every application that we have a range, because when we hire, we don't know if we're hiring somebody brand new in that career or somebody that has experience and gets credit for previous experience, which would bring them up to a higher range in that situation. So that's why you see a range. The maximum that we would pay out is that high range, and the lowest that is paid in that position is low range. So we do not have somebody picked. We have an application process that we will accept applications for and encourage anybody. It's a good career. You're going to get good training. It's a good crew to work with, and you have the best volunteer folks in the world in Josephine County when it comes to animals. So, Riley, I just want to say thank you as well to all that you do.
Absolutely.
And I wish we had 20 of you, but I don't know how you would ever sleep.
Why?
So.
Commissioner DeYoung, do you have any comments?
No. Oh, well, I did. Yes, I did. And on the herbicides brand that Ms. Castanelli brought up, I think today I read is the last day for comment on that.
Yeah, I forwarded that on. Hopefully you guys will get a chance to read that.
Yeah,
I'm going to look at it. There are certain things. All of those are probably in conformance with state and federal laws, which are very, very strict as far as the everything is considered a pesticide. I don't really know why they have a delineation for herbicides. Herbicides are just for fauna. And I suppose. So I'm going to take a look at that. The county uses certain things that are approved by the states and feds, and it's a actual cost-effective way of managing the fuel loads that we generate after harvest or catastrophic wildfire, any kind of management. It's those things that come back the fastest. They're not necessarily the things that we all want to see when we go through our forests. And there are other ways to do it, but they're really expensive to go out there and manually manage those understories. So I don't want to say that what the BLM is doing, you can say no to things like that, but then you also want to say no to catastrophic wildfire disease and dying forests. And it really needs to be an educated approach to responding to these things, not just a blanket no, because people are applying. It's ironic, you know, people are often protesting those kinds of things where they're miles potentially from anybody, and yet the ODOT, Department of Transportation, and our public works, the city, they're spraying things right out in front of people's homes on roadside, vegetation management. And I don't see a lot of people protest. It's just, if you're going to be doing it, do it comprehensive and understand what the applications are. Understand that your neighbor is really not that well regulated as far as when they buy Roundup or what have you, and they say, well, teaspoon is good, 1 teaspoon is good, 2 teaspoons is better. No, that is not the case. And there is very little regulation over that. And that's more of an issue, honestly, for people and their health than really what is being applied by federal agencies who have got incredible amounts of scrutiny over what they're doing. So
I think, just to dovetail onto that, I think when people say, hear the word herbicide, you know, my generation thinks of Agent Orange, because that's what Agent Orange was, is a herbicide. And it, you know, I think we've learned a lot from Agent Orange. It's cost taxpayers, I don't know how much, but you know, Mr. Collier probably knows better than I do, of what the Veterans Administration's response to that is in finance and money. It's huge to using Agent Orange half the world away. You know, it came home here. So I think that's where a lot of the hype comes from. But I think we've learned a lot from that.
Not that we can't be making progress on those things. That's certainly the case. A couple of issues that I wanted to talk about. Mr. Ford, you're absolutely right. The solving the fiscal element is not going to address one thing on the ground as far as the efficacy for fighting fires. And I was on Channel 5 yesterday, an interview, and the interview was good, but the headline was misleading. I don't believe anybody in the state, as far as a county is concerned, or city, is looking to litigate against the state. It's federal mismanagement that we're calling out on this issue, and not just fighting the fire as it's happening, it's the long-term effects of not doing remediation after catastrophic wildfire, of removing the dead and dying timber and reforesting. They don't do that on the Forest Services, and a lot of the BLM ground doesn't get that kind of application. The private ground does. You go out, and I've been to situations where you've got 3 examples of different management schemes. The specific one that I'm talking about is going to be in the Deer Creek drainage, and there's a fire that happened out there in the 90s, and you've got private, you've got county, and then you've got BLM. And the illustration of how those are coming back is just, it's glaring how management is key to getting those lands back into a productive state, both for an ecology standpoint and reducing fuel loads and mitigating future fire risk. Because what I've understood from fire managers is that if you don't manage that, it has a propensity to burn 3 times before it becomes fire resilient. And so it's not just the first fire, it's the 3 subsequent fires that are going to happen on that landscape. It's just inevitable because of the snags are the dominant catalyst for lightning strikes regenerating themselves into another fire. And it's not rocket science, which I don't understand that people can't get their head around it. The time to discuss it is not after a fire. We know that things are going to have a propensity to burn in Southern Oregon. We have 25 to 30% of the state's fires in any given year are going to happen in Josephine and Jackson County. So it's an inevitability that we just are going to have to manage. And the people we entrust it to, the agencies that we do, they're not looking at it. And I don't blame the local people. It's a federal level, higher level decision making that's got us where we're at today. And it's not okay with me. I think a lot's been said about the ACOs. There was one thought that I had, that calling them officers when they potentially are not. I think the supervisor is a sworn officer. Are the others as well?
They're all deputized, okay, by the sheriff currently.
I think one of the things that we haven't discussed is the fact that we're the only county in the state right now that has animal control officers that are have firearms, or at least the authority to carry them. However, they were historically under the Public Health Department. We're the only ones in the state, as I understand, to have that structure. And for me, it was always unsettling that we need people who are carrying to be under the supervision of somebody who has that authority, kind of it's in their wheelhouse, and that we're making that change, have made that change. And so this is just an example of that. The BOPTA group, I was the board-appointed liaison to that last year, and we've got 2 people who have been serving on that for quite some time. It's not exactly a role, much like the Rural Planning Commission, that you can come off the street and understand how assessment is done in the state of Oregon. We have one of the most complex property schemes in the state for assessing taxes and such. And if you're interested in learning more about that, you can go on to Schutz County's website or ours. I think we have a link to a video that they produced a couple of years ago that kind of explains how we got to where we're at with assessed values and your property taxes. So that would be really, really helpful. I believe we opened it up last year for applications, and I don't know that we received any. It's not that we can't. We probably could have. I'm prepared to go forward with the applications of people who have been serving in this role for quite some time. But I think in the interim, before BOPTA convenes towards the end of the year when the taxes go out, we could probably... I don't know that there's a limit to the number of people we can have on that board, and it would be a good idea to have more than just the two or three that we have. I think more minds in the room could help out and give longevity to the program. It takes a little while to come up to speed. It's only 1,500 acres that I've seen that the BLM is proposing to apply, and probably a very specific situation over the next two decades in their proposal. And from my cursory review, I'm not really concerned to the level that I think Ms. Casanelli brings to the table, but I will look into it further, being the natural resources liaison from the board. I think it really spurs the thought and the creation of a coordination committee so you can have a holistic approach to this. I certainly want those concerns raised. They're probably valid, but at the same time, having experts in the room who are knowledgeable about what is being applied, how and when, would probably be really helpful that we had that dialogue before making a decision on this, and at least be tracking the opportunity for comment, probably a little tighter than this board currently is. Mr. Collier, your comments are well-founded and thought out. The 300-foot setback was a recommendation, and that's all. I think we've had a discussion yesterday that we're going to probably reduce that setback, but the intent is for people to... You're already doing something that is not necessarily consistent with the nature of that zone, being in our dominant use is residential. And so if you are going to, we're going to make an exception, but you're going to have to conform with the appropriate setbacks. My recommendation was 200 feet. 208 feet is the distance of an acre. And so if you're going to do it in a neighborhood, you're already a non-conforming use to that zone. So there's going to be an exception to it. It doesn't mean that it's going to apply for everybody. There's a lot of situations where people on RR are a non-conforming use because on RR5, they're already less than 5 acres. And my opinion is if you are already a non-conforming use, you don't get to do it in that situation. You have to be at least 5 acres on an RR5 and conforming with that zone to then start talking about, okay, well, if you're at 6 or 7, 8 or 9 acres on an RR5, you have the capacity for a 200-foot setback to do what you want to do. That's the exception. That's the reason for it. And so it's just going to be part of that ongoing discussion. Can't say enough about Commissioner Morgan leading the cannabis advisory panel last night here in the Ambassador. If you missed it, we'd sure appreciate you tuning in to the YouTube video, signing up for that. And I thought it was really a great first quality meeting with Rob Ovette from AOC, who led that effort. And I know there were a number of people who tuned in like you, Mr. Collier, so you don't actually have to show up to the Ambassador. It was a good crowd, but also I bet there was a ton of people tuning in. The Rogue Valley Humane Society, I saw a clip about a cat situation, and I just wondered where the partnership was between what the animal control, animal shelter is doing and that cat situation. It said in the Humane Society, and you probably know more about this, we can talk offline afterward, what a challenge, and it's a reoccurring element, not just in Josephine County, but around the country, of people who are wanting to do the right thing, but in the event, in the end, they're doing a disservice to those animals if they're not able to care for them the way they need to be. So whatever the county can do from a shelter perspective to help out with that effort, I know that we've got quality people who are volunteers and staff over there working on this, and happy to help in any way we can. So those are my comments.
I really, the one I wanted to add to that on the BOPTA, which is the Board of Property Tax Appeals, we are 3 of 9 elected officials in Josephine County, And we do not have authority over other elected officials. And so certain duties are called upon those other elected officials that they are responsible for and in charge of. And we can encourage and have conversations with, but we're all equally elected by the people. And so we can have a conversation with the clerk asking as far as what's the ramifications of this or what's the situation with this. It's really her wheelhouse, and she has the right to do what she thinks is best for that position based on her experience and training and the fact that those positions don't answer to us. So we do the budget for them, but they are...
It's a delicate balance, that's for sure.
It's interesting.
Yep. But she is new in her position, and a lot on her plate. She's got potentially a January election that we haven't had in some years, which is going to be a challenge, and a number of other unique issues on these coming elections coming up. So the new motor voter instituting all of those provisions. She's got a lot on her plate, but I think she's doing a great job. And Commissioner Morgan is the liaison to the clerk's office and is providing good guidance there and in the effort. But more representation is not always happening, so we'll work on that. And then Commissioner Young.
Yeah, on the setbacks, we have no idea what shape 5 acres plus is going to be in. It might be 100 feet wide and however many feet long. But I think what we want to do as a board, I think we need to make it crystal clear what that setback is going to be going forward, so that anybody that is looking to buy a piece of property with an intention will have those rules in line, say, no, that doesn't fit my footprint, so I'm going to go over here, or I'm going to look somewhere else. I just think we need to be clear. Right now, it's all over the map. But we've got to, you know, I think, you know, we don't want to rush and get these things done, but we certainly want to make sure that everybody understands what the solid rules are moving forward. I wouldn't make an investment in anything that's as wishy-washy as what it is right now, especially something like a major land purchase. So, you know, we want to move this forward and get things going. But, you know, we talked about yesterday, I think you dropped off a list, and we went over every one of those items. So just to let you know, we did talk at a general discussion.
Commissioner Morgan, I understand you mean.
When it comes to rural residential and that farming is allowed, one of the first requirement of farming allowed in rural residential is that it not interfere with the neighbors. And so defining that, it can come down to smell, dust, all these other kinds of things that are outlined in our rural land development code and in state law. And so the only way to find a way to find peace is to either have setbacks where the setback level is great enough that it causes no interference with a neighbor, or have it so big that it's not allowed. So trying to find a way to find peace and find a way to do both, that it allows it, but it can't have the interference. And right now there's enough interference that it's causing issue.
You raised a point yesterday of significance. The setback is supposed to reduce the significance to a degree, and I think that's what you were working on, is how do you define that? But setting that setback reduces that significant level, trying to. I think that's what it's not going to say that you aren't going to have some of those challenges, that they're just not going to be to the significant level that they would have been had they been 10 feet, like the building code requires, from a property line, theoretically from somebody's bedroom window.
And like I said, our code already says it can't interfere with, and that interference is going on right now. And so trying to find a way to navigate and find a reasonable expectation that is defensible and meets the needs of everybody involved. So we're trying to, we got to the end of a meeting last night, and I had a couple of panel members come up to me and just say, wow. This isn't as easy as we thought. And so it's just kind of nice to know that they care enough to spend the time to deliberate, that they're willing to sacrifice their time to all the people in the community that are trying to lend expertise to it, to be a part of it, helping us come to a solution. If anyone has questions about the regulations, you can go to the Josephine County website. Under departments, you can find the planning department. The rural development code is there, and all the way down on page 191 out of 395 pages is section 61's criteria for farm use. And in this case, it doesn't even say significant. It just says farm uses shall not interfere with the use of adjoining residential properties. And so, really, when it comes down to this, we have to look at the purpose of rural residential. And it is a peaceful rural residential living. Anything that's outside of that is a non-conforming use. And with anything that you allow to be in a section that's non-conforming, you have to find a way to mitigate the factors. And that's what we're trying to do. And anyhow, I appreciate the efforts of everybody on that. We were there well past time last night. We went well past 9 o'clock. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll kind of discuss the outcome of that. So,
chart a course for moving forward. One of the things that was pretty revealing of last night's discussion was the idea that people say, well, we're going to challenge this. This isn't reasonable restrictions under what we've been given authority to for time, place, and manner. And, well, that's not really true, because the bookend has been established by Jackson County. They've been challenged, and to the degree that they prohibit cannabis, commercial cannabis production in all our zones over in Jackson County, that's one of our bookends. That's the question we asked. Is that something that Josephine County residents want to do here, or would they endorse that idea? The other one is we don't do anything, and we just try to do enforcement a little bit better than what we've done in the past on this issue. I think what we've been tasked with is finding that sweet spot in the middle. And so it may not be or feel reasonable to people who are doing cannabis production in a commercial capacity on rural residential to have a 300-foot setback. But that's what it may take for the other half of the population to feel like they've been heard, listened to, and say that, yeah, I mean, if it's 300 feet from my property line, my bedroom window, that's a reasonable consideration, given that if it was next to resource zone lands, if there are always next to resource zone lands, they can do a lot under the Oregon Right to Farm Act. So it's a challenge. It's going to be real fun. Has been so far. With nothing further, we can come back to the administrative calendar, and I'd entertain a motion to approve item 1A, which is approval of animal control officer supervisor.
So moved.
Seconded.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries 3-0. Item number 3 is the consent calendar. Item A, 3A, is various minutes made up of the Board of Commissioners, and item B is updated job description for animal control officer. Commissioner Morgan?
One of the things that happened with this process of looking at everything was realizing that the job descriptions and pay of our animal control officers had not been looked at in about 10 years or so. And so this is updating to get into line with where they should be. We've had a position with the county that we wouldn't be anytime 5% less than any of our competitors. We were much more than that. So this is just kind of bringing them into a, essentially bringing them into line with where they should be being paid.
Great. Item number...
And changing the definitions of who they're answering to was the other description.
3C is update of job description for social services facilitator in juvenile justice.
This position also is a position that previously existed, but kind of the, not the supervisor, but overseer of the group life counselors in the shelter. This person's responsible for all the assessments and treatment and behavioral skills that are being offered in the shelter. And so it's updating different titles and different processes just with the time since it was last updated in 2010.
And then item number D is RCC Amendment Number 12, Agreement for the Funding and Management of the Josephine County Transit System. Commissioner DeYoung's view is on the public works.
Yes, Mr. Chancey sent this over, and this what this amounts to is it is a continuation of an agreement that allows for Rogue Community College students and their staff also to board any transit vehicle free of charge by showing a current term student ID. Rogue Community College paid Josephine County $30,000 annually for this. I questioned the numbers, and so far it is not tapping into. In other words, there are no riding for free. They actually pay more in at the $30,000 than what they utilize. And then there was some question about where those funds can be used, because there's sometimes fare box has to be used for certain things. Can this be used? And he writes The funding received through this contract can be used to fulfill local match requirements for other federal transit funds. Money that comes through the fare box for the fee for service cannot be used for local match funds. So if there's anything left over, that he has a little bit of discretion as to where he can put that. So it's just, like I say, it is a continuation of that agreement. What it does is it allows students, when you're enrolled at RCC or the staff, encourages them to use, I'm going to assume out of RCC, there's probably a little bit of a parking problem out there when they're under full enrollment. So they're encouraging people to use the transit system.
What I'd like to point out as well is our transit system also now connects with Washington County.
Goes to Medford and RCC in Medford.
And so they can get to the campus in both downtown and out at White City, which if you're trying to go to school and get there, it's important to be able to class.
It's important to know this agreement does not cover the demand, respond, door-to-door, dial-a-ride, or the Rogue Valley commuter line. It does not apply to that. So.
Great. Item number 3E is Resolution 2017-043 in the matter of fair housing in Josephine County. This is a resolution that's required as part of our CDBG grant, Community Development Block Grant, and it's a requirement, federal requirement, and it just basically outlines the idea that we are not going to be discriminatory in the process of moving forward with the fair housing dollars that we've been entrusted with. So it's pretty simple. It just starts off that process and is something that needs to be done from time to time when we've been appropriated these dollars. So item number 3F is Resolution 2017-044 in the matter of appointment to the Board of Property Tax Appeals, affectionately known as BOPTA. And we've got Commissioner Morgan who spoke to this already, but if you've got anything else to say.
No, I just do want to reiterate what you said, is that it takes time to learn these jobs, and we have people on this board that know how to do that and do them efficiently, and that's an important thing when it comes to being a good steward of taxpayer dollars.
There was about 80 people who protested their tax bills. Mostly it's the rate that their properties are assessed at. So it's like anything, there's an opportunity for regress. That's what I think this country is known for, is that there's an appeal process. When you feel like you've been unfairly treated or taxed in this situation, you can appeal to your government and get a hearing by your peers. That's what this is. Commissioner Morgan is going to be the liaison representing the governing body and the Board of Commissioners this next year, handing the baton off. And it's quite an education. It, like I said before, it's pretty complex. It's not something you just come off the street and intuitively understand. So all the best to those people. We've got Paul Wilson, Harry Mackin, and Dennis James who are making up the balance of that. And I believe it's just a year appointment.
That's correct.
Every year. And so that'll be coming up. Anything further on that? Otherwise, I'd entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar items 3A through F.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
The only other thing I'd like to add is, since there's some job descriptions, I want to thank HR for their work on that. But I also just want to thank our sheriff. At a time that he is having to increase his staff with the increases at the jail, he's trying to meet the needs on patrol the best he can with hiring good quality people to get them trained. And in the meantime, we ask him to say, we'd like you to take on the supervision of the animal control piece as well. And for him to be willing to do that and say, yes, I know we can do better. I love animals. I want to be a part of making this better. It's a big deal. And he also has expressed, just the realization of the trust the people have placed in him with both the jail levy. And now he's going to be supervising a couple folks that are paid out of the animal shelter levy. Those monies are delineated in their own fund, so the accountability is there. But he takes that responsibility seriously, and I just want to thank him for the leadership that he's showing and the willingness to take on more than what he thought he was going to take on.
I was out there earlier this week from a facility standpoint, and he's got some recommendations as far as consolidating, making his operations more efficient. That's one of probably one of the most impressive things that I've seen from Sheriff Daniels, that the idea that there's always a better way to do it, and he's not looking at it for just the standpoint for a better way. It's reducing reducing cost, making things more efficient, reducing liability, and making every dollar go farther. And I really appreciate that. So we are looking at, you know, whatever efforts we can do from a facility standpoint to say, hey, why have we always done it this way? Why can't we do it like this? And it's like, well, that sure sounds good to me. The answer is yes until I find a reason to say no. So we're going to be doing some positive changes out there at the jail campus to try to just make things work more efficiently for everybody involved. So, and further, please call the roll. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries 3-0. Any other items that should properly come before the board at this time? Otherwise, we'll go on to matters from commissioners. Commissioner McKeon.
Yeah, I just talked to Nate this morning in corrections, and he put out a application for two positions that he wants to fill over there to step up his program to meet the ongoing need in doing the corrections. And I asked him, I said, just, you know, kind of a test. How many applicants did he get? And he said, almost 100. So that, you know, that's fantastic to know that people want to come to work for Josephine County and work for Nate's department, which is just, he just does a fantastic job over there. He's got, his whole department has a good attitude. They, you know, and I like that. I went to their potluck the other day and got here, we just had a ball. So now, you know, people have fun going to work, and it's a tough job. Commissioner Morgan knows every bit of it because she was in it for so many years. But that's a tough job to get up every morning. It takes dedicated people to get up every morning and go to work and deal with parole and probation and things of that sort.
The best part is all the calls in the middle of the night that you get as well, and sometimes responding in the middle of the night. So
yeah, well, I love
that. As well, I know it's being on call.
Yep. So, but anyway, he's looking to fill two new positions over there, and then a possibility of two more that will come through from Justice Reinvestment. So he's working real hard over there, and we're glad to have him on board and part of our staff.
Nice.
Mr. Morgan.
So last night we had the Cannabis Advisory Panel meeting, and for the most part, the response I could categorize into four avenues. A wait-and-see kind of approach as far as let's see what our legislator is doing. There was recommendations to petition the legislature for some state law changes. There was others that just wanted to take the time to make sure that everything was vetted. There were two significant recommendations from the panel as far as that the board should take. One was stick strictly to state law and acknowledging Senate Bill 100's delineation of zones and stay true to the purpose of the zones, and that would be to outright ban farm use in rural residential, but make it easier for the ability to have housing in the other zones that allow the farming, which is the exclusive farming and resource lands. And so that was one recommendation, was to make easier the way for housing in those resource lands and encourage the farming to go there. And the other recommendation was to do the home occupation option, where you have a scrutiny of anybody that would have a business in a rural residential area. And so I think there's more to be vetted there. I agree that there needs to be mitigation. Our code already says if you're going to do this outside of this area, you can't interfere. And we're not doing a good job of mitigating the interference. And I believe that a home occupation under Article 92, if it needs to be adjusted, there may be some adjustments needed in that. But that having a means of the scrutiny of the impact on the immediate neighborhood would probably be the best solution for mitigating things. But that is up to the board to decide. But those are the four responses that came out of the discussion last night.
You guys are meeting again in short order in the first part of October?
We are meeting October 10th. There's going to be more discussion. The assistant water master is going to be coming from the state to discuss the impacts of the water issues statewide, and we're still developing some other agenda matters. We invited anybody from the public who would like something addressed on the panel or from the committee to email our staff or myself, and we'll try to integrate that into agenda items.
There was a little bit of interaction just briefly from some of the members of the public wanting to ask questions and engage, and I think the chair did a really good job, maybe a little bit too stern, but from the standpoint that that's not really their charge. The panel's really looking to delve into the issue, and the opportunity for public comment has certainly been done through the Rural Planning Commission, this board at our first reading, and any other opportunity that people want to have and have taken by expressing their concerns and comments. But I think the reason they're on the panel is because they are the public comment. They have already expressed an interest in that subject matter. I can't say enough about the diversity of the panel, and but the respect level each person has for the different points of view. That's what I saw and noted last night, which I thought was a really positive thing. So that is their expression of public comment by being on that panel, and that they are charged with advising the board. And where they think they need more information from the public, they can do that probably outside of their meetings. Their agendas are pretty extensive, and how much they have to get through in a meeting doesn't really allow them the luxury of the time to really hear in an organized fashion the comments from the public, where people oftentimes are not necessarily bringing new information to the panel. They're just trying to vent, and that's not what that group is really for. You can do that here this morning at or any other meetings that we take public comment at. So good meeting last night, Commissioner Morgan.
Yeah, I want to commend Commissioner Mortar because she's kind of been spearheading this whole thing. She's got a pretty, you know, like last night, for instance, bringing Rob Bovet down from AOC. That was, I think that was monumental because he has the history. He deals with this issue every day and has been dealing with it for years at the state level. And I think it was very informative for him to come down and give an hour just lining out exactly what how we got here. And, you know, to spin off of Commissioner Heron says that, you know, there would be a panel. There would not be a cannabis advisory panel if we didn't listen to the people that have given public comment over and over and over and over again. If we were ignoring public comment, there wouldn't be that panel. There wouldn't be that need felt by the commissioners, by the board, to strike this panel up and get work on it.
Right.
So I think, you know, it all kind of dovetails in, and I know that members of the public last night, there was a few that wanted, you know, they felt that they should be able to stand up at every meeting, and that's not the case because it is a panel that they're to advise, you know, they are to advise the Board of County Commissioners on what they feel is the best movement forward. So I think that the public has had a tremendous amount of opportunity to weigh in at this, and even today, you're right, they could come in here and talk for 3 minutes, but, you know, I think that the meetings need to stay on track, and the chairman last night did. He stopped it before it ever got started, so that's kind of, that was exciting to see. I had to leave a little bit early, but, you know, I saw the meeting was going very well, you know, so, you know, it was, Commissioner Morgan had things well under control.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to congratulate Commissioner Morgan on her graduation from County College.
Oh, well, and likewise.
That ain't happened yet.
We don't graduate till November. We just finished all the classes.
We finished all our classes. The ink is not dry on the diplomas yet.
No, the colleagues get
we can still get pulled.
Yeah,
no,
just kidding.
We can still get pulled. But it was very informative to new commissioners. We had 31 classmates in the class of 17 at County College. And I think most of them are from rural Oregon, which really, I think that's going to resonate because we are known as, Class of 17 is known as one of the strongest classes they've ever had pull out of there, come out of the County College program. So, but I think it's because we're mostly rural participants.
Thank you.
Every class is their favorite class until the next one, right?
I don't think so. I'm talking to the people, the presenters and stuff. You know, we were not an easy class to present to, just strictly because we participated and we were engaged on every subject, and they didn't know where the questions were going to come.
They challenge everything they're told.
Oh, you bet.
Awesome.
You bet. Nothing. They didn't spoon feed anything.
Let's see what you do with that, because my class is in a leadership role that has probably not been done. We're everything. We're doing a lot of stuff, so you guys have shoes to fill. So it just takes time, you know.
And
you
got
to get there, and I'm actually...
There's a comfort zone you have to overcome, and I'm not there yet.
Well, the direction that this class is looking at, you know, and trying to be creative about solutions. Why are we always doing it this way? That's a really good perspective. So you guys are going to do well. Yep. It's going to be great to watch from the sidelines somewhere else. Hey, there's an issue that's just got a little bit of traction resolved. You might remember that after the resource management plan was a decision of record by the BLM about a year ago, Dwelling County partnered with other counties around the state in our initial pursuit of a lawsuit against the BLM, saying that the resource management plan that they developed wasn't in conformity with the ONC Act of 1937 that calls for at least 500 million board feet to be managed, put up for sale every year. And the best that this plan was approaching to do was about 260 million board feet on a good day, and woefully short of where we thought it ought to be. And that lawsuit moved forward yesterday, or earlier this week, in the event that the decision of record and the venue was decided to be the D.C. District Court by Judge Leon. So we'll be hopefully seeing some movement on that lawsuit here in the near future. And I was mentioned that I had an interview with Channel 5. It's something I had mentioned at the Joint City-County Workshop. It's not a surprise that I think that a lot of Oregon is dissatisfied with the fire response by the Forest Service and an agency under the Department of Agriculture. Sonny Perdue, the Agriculture Secretary, released a statement yesterday or just this morning on that, and he feels that the solution is not necessarily in new legislation to guide the agency, but just better practices within the confines of the rules they have. I frankly think that they need a little bit more of an emphasis in defining what the challenges really are, and that's where I come about to where there might be just a little bit of a need for a push from the local municipalities that have been negatively impacted for seems like a series of summers. So I want to just mention Collier's point, who spoke earlier. He's absolutely right. We craft these rules as a broad blanket approach to a challenge, which is just a specific number of people who are not engaged in the process. They're not engaged in our communities in a positive way, and they're not engaged in the solution. And that's really the challenge for me, is that we're penalizing people who are doing the right thing and being good neighbors with really trying to go after the bad apples. And are we even really addressing the bad apples through the proposal that we have? I know that I've gotten at least a couple of emails every day in the last week from people who are looking to see that the board does something to combat these problems, these challenges in our neighborhoods. And we're going to move it forward. We're the only county in the state who's asked a non-binding question on this. We're the first county in the state to form a cannabis advisory panel to really reflect. We were the first county in the state after Measure 91 passed in November 14 to put together people like Rob Ovette, who came down from Salem, who talked about this issue. It was a guy from Colorado and a number of others. So we've been leaning into this issue since it passed statewide. But it's not. We are the bedrock of where people are going to grow it, and going to continue to grow it for the foreseeable future. It's here, and we have to figure out the best way to deal with it, and that's what we're going to do. And anything else for the good of the order?
Nope.
With nothing further, the board is adjourned at 9:57. You guys have a great week and enjoy this weather.